So when you are fasting, when you are cold, you are activating these defense mechanisms that are not only designed to keep you safe in that moment, but they provide longevity benefits as well. So we know that people who don't eat all day long, who engage in things like, you know, cold showers or prolonged fasting, they tend to live longer. So these are some things that I would be encouraging people when we're thinking about, you know, doomsday, like body doomsday preparation. It's about getting back to some of these foundational basics: sleep, exercise, fasting, proper nutrition. Of course, community is also a really big part of that.
Welcome back to the Better Podcast with yours truly, Dr. Stephanie Estima. This show is for high-performing women who want better bodies, better minds, better relationships, better sex, and better families, and want to hear from a woman that can take the complex science and make it easy to integrate into everyday life. Every week, I'll be giving you access to world-class scientists, medical doctors, plastic surgeons, professional athletes, Olympic gold medalists, Hollywood actors, parenting coaches, sex experts, and psychologists. I am always looking to answer this question: what are the simplest things that we can do today to get better tomorrow? I am part geek, part magic, and it is my mission to be the voice for women. Let's get better together. Hello, friends, and welcome back to another edition of Better with Dr. Stephanie. I am your host, Dr. Stephanie Estima. Today, I wanted to bring you another episode on SARS-CoV-2 and COVID-19, otherwise known as the coronavirus. And this was an Ask Me Anything episode that we had scheduled for a while with Stephanie Major, my co-host, and myself. But this time we decided to flip the script and really just go into a lot of the details in terms of what we know about SARS-CoV-2, its mechanism of action, how it gains access into the cells, why it's different from influenza, why it's even different from the SARS epidemic that we saw in 2003. And I made a very relatively few strong comments on people who are not practicing social distancing or who are minimizing lethality and the severity of this situation. With love, of course, as I often do, and with data, because that's how you win. So talked about that and wanted to really go over. So this is a little bit technically heavy in terms of talking about ACE2 receptor sites and angiotensin receptor blockers and how the proteins gain access and fuse to the cells, etc. So there's parts of it that are technically heavy, but nothing that you can't handle. And I've also put a lot of information in the show notes for you. So if you want to use the show notes to get you through that part, you just go to bettershow.co/show notes, SHOWNOTES, show notes. And that will have studies that I have linked out to, and as well as charts and resources for you. So this is really just best practices and information that I am accruing as it is becoming available. And then after we get through some of that technicality in terms of why SARS-CoV-2 is important and why you need to be making it a priority, we get into a question around, so we talk about the germ, we talk about the virus, we talk about its virility and why it's important to pay attention to it. And then we get into a conversation around the host, meaning you. How we can make you the biggest, the baddest, the strongest, the most resilient, both in terms of your mindset and in terms of your cellular machinery and your cellular capacity. How we can start thinking about doing things that will grow your resistance muscles. And I don't mean your musculoskeletal system, although we do discuss resistance training and exercise. But I mean, this is not going to be the first time that we are ever going to encounter resistance or we are ever going to encounter things that are difficult. So we talk about lifestyle medicine and healthful practices that you can be implementing right now for the immediate term. So what you can do right now to help with prolonging as much as you can the time between now and if you were to contract the coronavirus or SARS-CoV-2. And then we talk about things like things you should be eating, how you should be thinking about fasting, because my fasting recommendations are very different during this time. We talk about supplements that you can be taking. We talk about resistance training. We talk about sleep and
I talk about what I'm doing with my kids, how I'm getting them to hand wash. And I hope that you'll enjoy the question that I asked them to get them to scrub. They are scrubbing their hands like pros right now. So stick around. That's towards the end of our conversation. And really, this is just more about information, getting you the information that I want and need you to have in terms of why we take that we should be taking this seriously. And Florida, I'm looking at you right now. So please take hold of this message. And really, this is just about how I can be serving you in this time. So our podcast schedule is a little disrupted. We are going to be releasing this. Today is Thursday, so I'm going to hope to get this out in the next day or two to you. And I am looking for your feedback. So you can reach me on Instagram. I am at Dr. Stephanie Estima, or you can reach me on Facebook. I'm active on both platforms, and you can tell me what it is that you need, and I will make sure that I am trying to prepare content and serve you during this time. Because as long as we are overprepared, that will help precede us from falling into panic. So without further ado, please enjoy this special AMA with Stephanie Major and myself on SARS-CoV-2. One of my goals this year is to make it my best year ever with my skin. And one of the ways that I'm doing that is with the Boncharge Red Light Neck and Chest Mask. Wrinkles, acne, scarring, skin roughness, loss of collagen and elastin happen in the face and in the neck and the décolletage area on our chest where the skin is very thin and susceptible to skin damage. I think at this point we're all pretty good about putting sunscreen on our face, but so many of us miss the neck and the chest area too. I use the Boncharge neck and chest mask daily for about 10 minutes in the morning while I'm checking emails. Their red and near infrared light waves together penetrate up to 5 to 10 centimeters below the skin surface. The red light reaches the skin's top layers, and the NIR light targets the deeper tissues without UV exposure, and that's going to help reduce the fine lines, wrinkles, and to help ramp up collagen and elastin production. So I want you to head over and have your best skin with me this year. Go to boncharge.com/better. That's BETTER. And use the discount code BETTER at checkout. And that's going to give you 15% off your entire cart. Transform your health and fitness with the Carol Bike, the smartest, most effective exercise backed by science. You can experience unparalleled results in just a minimum of 15 minutes per week, per week, thanks to AI personalized workouts tailored to your age and your fitness level. You will increase fat loss, train up your strength and your speed, and have better energy, something that every woman, including myself, absolutely covets. I always say that women are the original biohackers. If there's a way for us to feel better and look better, we are all over it. Carol Bike, in my opinion, is one of the best pieces of cardio equipment that you can invest in. Studies prove that Carol helps you achieve a 12% increase in cardio fitness, lowers the risk of type 2 diabetes by 62%, and reduces blood pressure by 5% in as little as 8 weeks. Begin your transformation with the Carol Bike today and enjoy $100 off using the promo code BETTER for our beautiful Better Podcast listeners. That's BETTER. All you have to do is visit carolbike.com. So I have my hostess with the mostest, Stephanie Major, alongside with me. Welcome back.
Thank you so much for having me. We can't be together in person, but you know, I feel your energy even through a call like this. So I'm so glad that we can have a discussion today and I get to see your face and have that connection with you, because I'm really missing it. I'm sure a lot of people are feeling the same way with people that they love, but yeah, get on a video call with them, because even just seeing you right now just lit me up. So I'm really excited to have this conversation with you.
I haven't seen you in, so we were complaining the last AMA. We were like, we haven't seen each other for 2 weeks. This is the longest. And now I think this is actually going to be the record, because I haven't seen you now, I think, in person for 2 weeks.
Right.
And it doesn't look like it's going to be stopping anytime soon.
Yeah. And we're pretty lucky, because we have I'm really thankful that I have my daughters in the house. So there is that human connection, because yesterday when I went for a run, it was almost bizarre to see other people. I went for a run. Everyone was staying very far away from each other, but it was bizarre to see other humans. But what I really liked, that instead of doing the courtesy, you know, the neighborly nod, just like the no smile, yep. kind of just a nod.
Yeah, yeah, there and, you are, nod.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. It was people really looking at each other in the eye and smiling and just knowing, hey, we're all in this together. Like maybe we're not connected and we're not gathering in the same places, but yeah. let's take that moment to connect. And I thought that was really special.
I think that's really great. And I think that we are all being reminded of our, how delicate life really is and, yeah. and our humanity and how much connection really does matter. I mean, there's like, yeah. You know, there's been a couple of memes like, man, what a year this week has been, eh? You know, like, and, you know, 2 weeks from now, we're going to know everyone's hair color and, you know, all this kind of mm-hmm. silliness. But I think at the end of the day, we are really realizing how much we depend on each other, how intertwined mm-hmm. we really are. So thank you for that observation and for sharing that.
How are your kids feeling? What are they feeling?
Yeah, they're good. I have, as you know, I have very sensitive children. They're very mm-hmm. empathic. So my little one in particular, he's 7. He's been asking about coronavirus and what happens if you get it and are we going to die? And, you know, so he was hearing about it from his peers before school was canceled. And we've been very, we've been taking a lot of precautions to not discuss it at the dining, you know, at the dinner table. And whenever right. I'm trying to relay information to Giovanni about things that I've researched or things that I've, you know, new understandings, which we're going to talk about today, we've been in the bathroom sometimes talking about it with the door locked. Cause I don't want the kids constantly hearing mm-hmm. about it. I mean, this has hijacked the world's attention. And mm-hmm. I think that they don't have the capacity to understand the severity, and I don't want them to just go to, well, what if my mom dies, or what if my dad dies, or what if my grandmother dies, or whatever. So we've been very careful about trying to lower the noise and the talk about it in the house. But they're definitely, mm-hmm. when we talk about gratitude, we have this gratitude practice. I've mentioned it a couple times to you, and I've mentioned on the podcast a few times. In the evening, when we're sitting around a dinner, we say, what are 3 things that you're grateful for? And last night it was, I'm grateful that we don't have the coronavirus, and I'm grateful that we can stay in the house so that we don't get sick. Aww. You know, so it's still still weighing on them, but we're trying to be vigilant in terms of the information that's being shared.
Yeah, that's smart. So I have teenagers at home. So the interesting challenge was when I really made that decision to social distance, I had to have that conversation with my 16-year-old, who socializing at that age is their entire
That's life. That is life at 16.
And, yeah. And so I'm very grateful for Jennifer Kalari, which I know you've had on the podcast, because I had to use the calm technique, because my first instinct was, well, if you go out there, you can never come back, and you're going to bring, you know, and I started to panic, and I thought, you know what, that's not what she needs right now. Mm-hmm. So we had a really beautiful conversation, and I just mirrored back everything that she was feeling, like, yeah, it sucks. You love seeing your friends. You need to see your friends. It's so important to see your friends. I want to see my friends too. And then it evolved into a conversation of, well, you know what, this is a decision that I'm making, and I need you to be on board with it with me, because if I'm making the decision for myself and for my younger daughter, you have to be on board, because if there's no point if we're not all doing it together.
Yeah.
And please do this for me. And, you know, ever since that conversation on Sunday or Monday, it's been really nice. We're getting into the groove of things, of being home and mm-hmm. being together and making family TikToks and, you know, playing video games that they normally wouldn't have been able to play. And we're cooking together. So I'm really grateful that they're in this with me and that we're practicing this together. Yeah.
Yeah. That's awesome. And I wanted to do this. I wanted to have this conversation with you because I wanted mm-hmm. to talk about, you know, I've been a really big advocate this entire time around being over-prepared. So being armed with information and being able to arm your home and setting up your home in the case of social distancing, like you and I are both practicing, or in the more extreme case, if you are quarantined or if the mm-hmm. city goes on lockdown. And I have some friends in Puerto Rico who I've been in contact with over text, who, you know, Puerto Rico is completely shut down now. So you cannot, it's mm-hmm. a 24 24/7 shut down. You cannot leave the home unless you are going to the grocery store or it's a medically necessary trip, and you can be fined. And it is very much a, you know, some are calling it a police state, and you know, yeah. We can talk a little bit about that. But I have, and we'll link to this in the show notes. The list a couple nights ago was like 7 o'clock. I'm like, you know what? I'm going to publish another article on Medium, and let's put together a quarantine list. Let's put together a mm-hmm. list of what you need in the home. If, you know, and we're in Toronto, and we have, you know, the schools are shut down right now. I think museums are closed. Like most government offices are closed. I think the public transit is still running, but what we have to be prepared for is, mm-hmm. and is the eventuality, if it comes to fruition, that if things do completely shut down, you do have to have a self-sustaining hamlet, at least for the short term.
Yeah.
And and like I've been saying, there is absolutely no downside risk to being overprepared, other than maybe some mm-hmm. mockery from your friends. And I've had medical professionals that I've been in discussions with, natural health professionals who do not share my opinion in terms of the severity of this. And it's been interesting over the last week to really see there's two main camps, right? There's two sort of groups that people can fall under. One is, this is really serious and it's going to get worse and we need to take drastic measures right now, which is the camp mm-hmm. that I firmly fall under. And then there's this other camp where it's like, well, it's not really that big of a deal. Let's look at the mortality rates with influenza. Let's look at the morbidity rates and the mortality rates of SARS-CoV-2, which is now the appropriate name for the coronavirus, because we know coronaviruses are, there's many different types, but this particular outbreak is SARS-CoV-2. So they are looking at this and saying, well, it's not really that big a deal. It's going to pass. And there's some fallacies in that thinking. And I wanted to, you know, especially for the listeners that have been following me, I have been really trying to up my game in terms of getting information out to people. So I thought what we could do, if you think this is a good idea, is really just talk about the mm-hmm. pathophysiology of the disease, because this is something that I have been literally, I refresh PubMed like several times a day,
yeah.
and I'm looking for new reports that are coming out of China to see what the protocol has been, what has worked, what hasn't worked. We're seeing a lot of traditional Chinese medicine that's being implemented there, which is really nice to see, alongside of the allopathic interventions, like the medicines and stuff mm-hmm. that they're using. So I wanted to maybe go over why it's different from influenza, like the traditional flu, and even how it differs from the last SARS outbreak, which was in 2003. Mm-hmm. And I mentioned on the last episode, I was an intern at the time, and I was quarantined because I was interning at a hospital where there was a confirmed case of SARS-CoV at the time. So I ended up missing final exams, like it was my radiology final, and I missed a couple other things because I wasn't allowed to leave my home. And at the time, I was rolling my eyes and like, whatever, this is so stupid. Now I have to like take my radiology final in the summer versus, you know, in March or whenever it was. And, so I wanted to talk a little bit about why this is different, why the morbidity rate is different. And we can talk a little bit about mortality as well. I think that might be useful, especially, I mean, you and I were on a call a couple of days ago with some of the most brilliant minds in business. Like these mm-hmm. were, you know, mm-hmm. you could argue that these were like the most successful business owners in the country. Yeah. And they didn't really understand their businesses were still open. They were still going out in the public. They were almost, there was one person in particular who was almost like rolling his eyes around, there's only one case in my town. And, and it's not his fault. It's just, it's just he doesn't understand the science. Why would he? And then when you get these opposing views, you know, mm-hmm. if you happen to listen to someone who's like, oh, it'll pass. Oh, look, it's getting better in China. Oh, look, it's, right. you know, then there can be this kind of skewed perception on the severity of the disease.
No, I love that we're going to talk about this, because out of my own mouth, I've said to you a couple of days ago, I'm lucky to have private conversations with you. I said, you know what? I would rather almost just get it so that I'm not living in fear and I've had the flu before. So what if I just had it and then I just got over it and then I'm not living, you know, looking around the corner for this dark monster that's going to get me.
Right.
And so I would love for you to speak on, you know, why this is different. And I was pregnant at the time for my oldest daughter, Jade, during SARS. Mm-hmm. And I didn't have it, you know, it was a completely different thing than it is now. So I would also love to hear why it's different. What's the difference between then? Why didn't it happen this way? Why weren't we everyone quarantined then or practicing social distancing then? Mm-hmm. So I'm excited. I'm ready to fall forward into my laptop listening to you speak about this.
Awesome. All right. So first thing I'll say is this is going to be kind of dense, technically dense. So the show notes are really going to help you here. If you are somebody who really wants to understand why this is different, I am going to be building out the show notes as much as I can with references, with papers, with diagrams, if I can, just to help you understand what this is. So if this is seeming like it is a little bit technically dense, then the show notes will really help you out here. So a couple things. The outbreak in 2003 and this particular outbreak. So we're calling the outbreak in 2003 is SARS-CoV. This is SARS-CoV-2. Now the big difference here is the infectiousness of the disease, of the virus. And I'll explain a little bit. I'll sort of break that down for you. So when we're looking at SARS-CoV-2, the current viral outbreak, what we know about it is that it gains entry to the cell, and there's a particular cell that it is that it will bind to. This is called the ACE2 receptor. So this is the angio. For those of you that want to know what ACE2 stands for, angiotensin converting enzyme. So it will bind to this receptor, and it will gain access to the cell, and then it can use the cell's machinery to propagate, to replicate itself. Now, when we think about the ACE2, why that's significant is we see ACE2 receptors and we see this ACE2 in abundance in the lung. So we see a lot of this type 2 pneumocyte. We see this a lot in lungs, in the lungs. We see this in the heart. We see these receptors in the intestines, and we see them in the kidney. So when we're looking at the deaths from this virus, what we see most commonly is that people, there is some type of, there's almost always lung collapse, or the pulmonary function has been very heavily retarded, meaning that it is attenuated. We also see a lot of myocarditis or infection or cardiovascular issues as well. So these two things tend to go together. And one of the reasons why I am most concerned about this virus as it pertains to North Americans is we know that most North Americans have some sort of, well, we know that about 42.5, 42.7% of Americans in the US are considered obese. Mm-hmm. And before my Canadians punt that, punt mm-hmm. that schema to our fat cousins to the south, I will offer that in 2017, 64% of Canadians over the age of 18 were considered obese. So we are obese as a society. And with obesity, we know that that is very much the linchpin for most diseases, cardiovascular, hypertension, type 2 diabetes, any type of metabolic derangement in terms of hormonal control, the glucose insulin dance, etc. So this is why, and I'll sort of plant the seed now and we can come back to it. There's an immediate need in terms of what we need to be doing, but then there's a longer or more, maybe more an intermediate to long-term question that we need to be thinking about in terms of how can we take our power back? Because these are by and large things that we have control over, and we have a lot more control over our cardiovascular risk, hypertension, obesity, type 2 diabetes than I think most of us realize. So I'll come back to that. So we have ACE2 expressed in the lungs, the heart, the kidneys, the liver. Now, what happens is a lot of these patients are on ACE2 inhibitors. So we will see patients with hypertension, type 1 or type 2 diabetes, on ACE2 inhibitors or something called an ARB, which is an angiotensin receptor blocker. Mm-hmm. Now, those have been shown to reduce inflammation in those patients, but in particular with COVID-19, as it relates to COVID-19, what we're seeing is this and I'm using this word very intentionally, can be a precursor to more severe complications if and when you do get infected. Because what happens when you're on these types of medications is you are upregulating the ACE2 receptor. And if you have more of that ACE2, then that gives the virus more access to invade those particular cells. So and this is not to say you need to get off these medications immediately. Like, right, that's not the current recommendation. There's been a lot of cardiologists and medical doctors that are, their recommendations at this point is to continue the medication, but you do have to be monitoring your symptoms and staying in contact with your primary. One of the things I wanted to potentially bring up as a further note of concern is, in, I think it was early March, there was some German scientists who wrote a paper on the tropism of coronavirus, meaning like the reason why it has been able to propagate and grow as fast as it has. And it is because when you look at the structure of the virus, there is something called a furin cleavage site on the spike protein. Don't worry about what that means. Basically, what that furin spike, the furin cleavage site means is that virus is able to fuse to a variety of different cells. So we talked about the lungs, the heart, the gut, and the kidneys expressing that ACE2 receptor site. But the other concern is that the virus can also invade other cells, even that express that low ACE2. So there was a report that I just read where there was from China, where they were able to demonstrate that the COVID or the SARS-CoV-2 was able to invade the central nervous system, and it had caused encephalitis or like inflammation of the brain in one of their patients. So I don't say all these things to scare you. But what I'm trying to demonstrate, hopefully in the most clear way that I can, is that this is not the flu. We know what the flu is, right? It's a terrible couple of days. You stay at home. Maybe you're vomiting. Maybe you're sweating. Maybe you're nauseous. You lose your appetite. Your immune system is trying to expel the virus. What's very different about this is that for the first couple of days, so the mean, they're talking about 5 days or so now. It used to be they were saying 12 to 14 at one point, but now it's like a mean of 5 days where someone can be completely asymptomatic before they start to show symptoms. Yeah. And that's not like, if you have the flu, maybe there's a day or two of incubation, but you are pretty sick pretty quickly. And that is a good thing because your body recognizes the invader and is like just trying to expel it. With this guy, it's silent for the most part, even though there's been some reports out of China where they have, the patients were completely asymptomatic, but on chest x-ray, they were already showing some of the changes in their lungs. They take a picture of your lungs and they can see there's opacities in the chest x-ray, even before the patients are symptomatic. So this is why the social distancing is so important. And this is really a message for Florida in particular. If you are a Floridian and you are listening to this, for whatever reason, I don't know why, but the culture or the narrative in that particular state seems to be, I'm American, I'm going to do what I want, I'm in a warm place, and it's spring break, and I'm going to go there anyway. But what we know is that you could be completely asymptomatic and be transferring this to all of your friends. And then later that day, they can transfer it to their parents or other people or their grandparents if they're seeing them. We know a lot of people, especially in Canada, they live in, they go to Florida over the wintertime.
Yeah. And they're saying that the amount of cases double every 4 to 5 days, correct, with no social distancing?
Right, exactly. So that's what you're referring to there is the R-naught or the rate of spread. And what we know is if there's no measures in place like social distancing, it's 2 to 5 days where the rate of infection can spread, because it is this particular virus is about 1,000 times more virulent than the previous SARS virus. And I will also just say, I didn't say this at the beginning, but I'll say this now. I'm not an infectious disease specialist. Okay. So I am I'm not an immunologist. I want you to just take what I'm saying with a grain of salt. Know that I am a very good amalgamator of information. So that is what I have been doing here. So what I am presenting is case reports. I'm presenting papers that I'm reading, but this podcast obviously does not replace, anything that the WHO is recommending or the CDC or anything like that. But this is really just my effort to get information out to people. Especially the healthcare providers who are kind of shucking this off as not a big problem. And in my opinion at this time, that is completely irresponsible and demonstrates a lack of understanding of the mechanism of action and the lethality of it. I have a friend in New York who had COVID-19. He is recovered from it now. So he is, past and in incredible shape. Like he's in great shape, trains athletes, all this kind of stuff. And he was mentioning, before he was infected, him and his daughter were holding their breath. Like they were having a game where like who could hold their breath the longest. And he was able to hold it for 1 minute and 40 seconds. And even now, even after him being recovered, he's not able to hold it for longer than 6 seconds.
Wow.
And he's in incredible shape.
Yeah.
So this is not something to be taken lightly. And for the people that are like, what about the mortality and the morbidity of it seems to be mild. When we talk about mild, I said this in the last podcast, 80% of people who contract the SARS-CoV-2 and become ill from it, 80% of them, about 81%, are considered mild. But what that means is you don't require hospitalization.
Mm-hmm.
That's what mild is. So, right. We want to kind of just check in with our biases here and think about like, what does mild mean? So you could be not able to breathe. You could have heart palpitations. You could have, it's like the people that I know that have contracted it and have gotten over it are reporting that it's like 10 times the severity of the flu. It is like nothing they've ever had before, even though they were previously healthy. So I just want, let's just check our biases for a minute and not underestimate this. And I've had pneumonia in the past. So I don't know if I mentioned this in the last podcast or not, but I've had severe pneumonia to the point where I would go up the stairs and I would be winded. And sleeping on either side of my, overnight was painful for me. So I understand how, I remember when I first got over that that first bad episode of pneumonia, I was like, I understand why these 80-year-olds succumb to this. Like why? Because they don't have the grit. They don't have the cellular reserves to be able to get over this. So, does that make sense?
And that makes total sense. And we've both worked in hospitals. We both have children. I've had to go to the hospital with, with a daughter with a broken foot.
Yeah.
Who we know the hospitals. We know how busy they are. We know how overloaded they are on a good day. So doesn't that 20% not terrify you? If 20% needed hospitalization or some sort of intervention or healthcare, that's a lot of people if we don't really slow down this curve. Like it's just there's no way that we can handle that many people.
And I don't have stats on Canada because it is incredibly hard to find information. But Canada, the one thing I will say about the States is you can find anything you want about American statistics. So I will give you an American stat here, and we can just assume that this is very similar in Canada, but I don't have the data for sure. What we know about hospital beds in America, ICU beds, there's about 95,000 of them. in a country of 330-ish million. So when we think about infection, when we, I can't do math off the top of my head, but you know, even if we assume a 1% infection rate, you can imagine how quickly the system is going to be overloaded. And what we've seen in Italy is the people are in the hallways trying to get care, and the doctors are, because there's so many people that are infected at the same time, they are having to choose who gets ventilation. You know, for people that have more serious complications, they're having to choose who gets ventilation and who does not. I mean, first of all, I can't even imagine having to make that call, but imagine that's your grandmother. That's like, you know what? We don't think that she's going to make it, you know, like just, I please be responsible. I know that there are many people that are already doing the right thing. They are already social distancing to the degree that they can. But for those of you that may be listening that think that this is going to pass, or I'm super healthy, so this doesn't concern me. At this point, I feel like this is, you know, a civic duty that we have as a society as a whole, to try and protect people who are most susceptible to it.
I agree. Yeah, I totally agree. So, what else? What more? Do you have more science?
More death.
My way. Yeah.
So I wanted to share the virility of the virus, not because I want to scare people, but just to really drive this point home that this is something to be taken seriously. Now, the other side of the argument is, so that's the germ, right? Mm-hmm. But what about the host, right? Because there's a reason why some people can get over it. Like I just read in Japan, she was 103 years old. She just got over it. She had corona, she had the COVID-19, which is the disease that comes from SARS-CoV-2, and was able to fully recover from it. So what the question, and this is the intermediate term question that I planted before, there are immediate things that we can be doing. It's the hand washing, the social distancing. But what are the intermediate, or the things that we can start doing right now, but are going to take a little bit more time to implement? And this is kind of what you and I have been talking about privately, in terms of how can we make ourselves the worst host possible for this virus? And, you know, this is kind of part germ theory, part host theory, but I think that there is some truth in the middle here, where we think about the virility and the lethality of the germ itself, but can, you know, is it contagion, or can we start improving ourselves as a society? And I mentioned those obesity stats a few moments ago, and this is a time where you are at home. For many, many people, they've either, you know, been laid off or temporarily laid off, or they're working from home, or, you know, they're practicing social distancing. So they're staying in their home. So this is such a beautiful time for us to reevaluate some of our priorities, where we have been spending our time, our focus, our energy, and our money, and how we can maybe now move into a psychology and a physiology of empowerment and strength. So I wanted to, and maybe you can even talk about some of the things that you're doing as well, but I want to talk about some like lifestyle medicine, like getting back to, you know, the stuff that I geek out about all the time. Like we can talk about nutrition, we can talk about fasting and what my specific fasting recommendations are right now. Exercise, which I know you've been engaging in, you were talking about your run, and also our mindset around this, because it is so easy for us to get into this fear and hysteria around corona and around SARS-CoV-2. And I think that we really do want to be practicing things that are going to get us into those parasympathetic states, or, you know, as my friend Sachin posted a meme the other day, and it's sort of tongue in cheek, but it was, you know, survival of the calmest, right? Like how can we be the calmest, and how can we ride the wave here, but also, you know, engage in a new beginning for ourselves.
Okay, I love that. Let's start with fasting, because my first thought was, great, Dr. Stephanie, this is the best time for me to fast ever. I'm going to go on the longest fast. It doesn't matter. Like, this will save food in my home. And I'm so thankful that I said that thought out loud, because you had a different response for me. This is not the time that I should be going for the 72
You got it.
72 hour fast.
Yeah. So normally I am a big proponent of fasting. I've written, I don't know how many articles on it. I've incorporated into my nutrition programs online. For right now, we want to be thinking about fasting in two different ways. So whenever I talk about fasting, traditionally what I'm referring to is a fast that lasts longer than 24 hours.
I am incredibly bullish on sauna as a therapy for recovery, heart health, and overall aging well. I personally decided on an infrared sauna from Sunlighten because of the range of far wavelengths and near infrared wavelengths that it offers. Saunas help with detoxification and rejuvenation to rid your body of toxins. It helps with heart health by improving circulation, reducing blood pressure, and helping keep the arteries supple. It helps with muscle recovery by easing the tension and soreness to recover faster, and of course, stress reduction. With the warmth and the relaxation of sitting in a sauna, it's crucial for hormonal balance and achieving a state of well-being necessary for a strong physique and a strong mind. If you visit sunlighten.com/better and use code better to get a discount. That is sunlighten, sunlighten.com/better and use code better at checkout.
So at this point, I am not recommending fasts longer than 24 hours. Now, do I have an RCT to back that up? No. Do I have any papers that suggest that fasting for longer than 24 hours is going to increase your susceptibility to COVID-19? No. But what I am working off of is my knowledge of fasting, what happens during a prolonged fast. And what we know is that during a fast, it is a stressor to the body. So it is, your cortisol levels are going to increase. It is going to be, you know, you're going to be activating, there's a lot of benefits to it, but what I'm most concerned with is the cortisol rise in a longer term fast. So after the fast, of course, we know that there's all these immunological benefits. We have new immune cells that are being born. We have new native cells to tissues and organs that are being born. And it is a wonderful thing. But for right now, the type of fasting that I am recommending for people is to still engage in that daily time-restricted feeding window, or what most people would refer to as intermittent fasting. So you're still restricting the hours in which you eat, but you're still eating every single day. That's my recommendation for right now and for the next little while, because you're still going to get the circadian biology benefits, meaning that you're going to help, you know, you're not going to be eating right before you go to bed. So you're going to be helping with your sleep. You are going to be potentially fasting a little bit longer in the morning. So you're going to be able to get into that ketogenic state, or that state where you are producing ketone bodies. But longer fast than 24 hours are something that I would just for, you know, and again, no RCTs, but just, we want to be easy with our bodies right now. Any fast where you are restricting for 18 hours. So if you do like that 18-6, so you're eating for 6 hours, fasting for 18, or the other one would be 16-8. So fasting for 16 hours, eating for 8 hours, you're still seeing a nice drop in insulin during that time and a nice bump in growth hormones. So you're still getting a lot of those physiological benefits, but they're just not as big as when you were to do a 72-hour fast or 96-hour fast or whatever. So yeah, fasting, that's my recommendation for fasting. The food is again, this is what we talk about in the Estima diet all the time, is honoring your cells with nutrient-dense foods. Mm-hmm. So I know that a lot of people have been stocking up on packaged goods, and I'm not saying to get rid of those things, but maybe what you can do is also stock up on things like olive oil and nuts and seeds and salmon, you know, canned salmon and canned sardines and canned vegetables, like, you know, the canned tomatoes and the beans and that kind of thing, which are going to impart more health benefits than the mac and cheese or the instant potatoes or, you know, whatever.
Right. Yeah. You mentioned sleep a little bit too, and I know you're such a big fan of sleep. How important is it right now to be, you know, should people be up all night, you know, playing video games,
consuming the news? Yeah, no. And I would thank you for bringing this up, because that's actually the first place that I'd like to start with people is this is your home. This is the perfect time for you to be sleeping. Like, just make a little pinky promise to me and Major that you will sleep for 8 hours every day this week. And, you know, people that are concerned with weight loss, like, I always joke, like, this is the cheapest diet you can ever engage in. If weight loss is the goal, sleeping for 8 hours every single night, you will see that your belly, if you have extra weight through the abdomen, you're going to see that your belly is going to come down. You're going to see that you release water weight. You're going to have a less tendency to eat. When you're sleep deprived, you also want crappier foods, right? It's this vicious circle where when you're tired, you want more of the processed carbohydrates. When you're tired, you're less motivated to work out. When you're tired, you tend to be in the area of your brain that is in more fear and more panic anyway. So I want it, you know, sleeping is like top priority right now. And some of the ways that you can really improve that, some of the ways that you can really get into a really great sleep is by putting hard boundaries around the amount of information that you're taking. Cause we're all home right now. So we all have, where's my phone? Like, we all have our phone. We can all be scrolling, and like literally every second post is about coronavirus right now. Mm-hmm. So really just choosing maybe two or three times in the day where you go to the WHO or the CDC, or if you want to check out, there's a nice map that Johns Hopkins University has put together in terms of the amount of confirmed cases throughout the world. If you want to be checking that 1-2 times a day. And other than that, like that's it, you know? Yeah. Because now everybody has an opinion on it. Everybody can just get on and do a Facebook Live about coronavirus, and it is going to overwhelm your system. That is like my number one, and even myself, because I've been like, oh my God, I gotta learn about this virus. How is it so lethal? How is it so virulent? How is it, like, what's the morbidity? What's the mortality? Like, I also am doing that. And I've been checking myself, at least in the past couple of days. It's like, okay, I gotta just bring it down a little bit. Like, I gotta bring down the amount of information that I'm letting in, because it is affecting my sleep. It's affecting my mood. And it can bring us into this place of helplessness and hopelessness. Yeah. And Major, you and I talk about this all the time. Like, we have way more power than we give ourselves credit for. So this is a wonderful time to be bringing back your, some of these basics.
Or even just starting a sleep routine. You're here now in the evening. There's, you know, you don't have a late dinner party or a meeting or a show to go to. You're home. Yeah. So start creating. If you don't have a sleep routine at night, start creating that for yourself. Map it out and then just stick to it for the next, 2 weeks in a row. And it's just going to become a normal part of your life after that. And then, you're sleeping better even after we come out of this. So I think it's a really great time to just take that time to figure out what works for me at night, what puts me into that restful 8 hours of sleep. Okay, so we did sleep, we did exercise. No, we didn't do exercise. Are your exercise routines changing?
Not at all. They're exactly the same. Yeah. And that's really, so for me, I always work out at home. So I've created this home gym where I go down in the morning and I get my stuff in. So a lot of people now are not going to the gym. There's a lot of ways that you can still get your workout at home. So I've been posting a lot of kind of home videos for people to try out on my Instagram. So you can kind of go there if you like. There's a lot of, depending on, your orientation, like, there's yoga DVDs and videos that you can do at home. There's Pilates, and you can even just use your own body weight. I mean, you have a home gym. It's called your body, right? Like, you can just do squats and burpees and switch lunges and push-ups. And actually, you know what I'll do? Today I wanted to post on my Instagram, I call them my kitty bell swings. So like I pick up Andreas and I'll literally do kettlebell swings with him. Yeah. Because you can, and I use my kids as squat weight and as push-up weight, because sometimes it's like super fun for them to see how fast mom can can crumble onto the ground, but it's also using their weight as my resistance. And the more muscle mass you have, of course, we know the more resilient you are, the better insulin and glucose dance there is, because we have a larger disposal. You can dispose of your glucose much more efficiently and much more readily the more muscle mass that you have. Obviously, the stronger that you are, the more resilient you are. So training and working specifically on resistance training, and I talk about this all the time, but so I won't repeat myself here, but resistance training should be part of everybody's exercise regimen. We just have to figure out like where you are and how, you know, how you can start. So check out my Instagram. I have a couple of beginner, I posted, it was like maybe a day or two ago now. Just no weights, just like my body weight, like stepping up onto a bench or a couch, you know, doing curtsy squats and, you know, dancing. Like that was my workout. So actually that was yesterday. And I'll tell you, my butt is so sore today from what I did.
Yeah. But it's not changing. So you're continuing as usual. Mm-hmm. I love that. What about your supplements? What about, are they changing? Are you adding anything in? Are you discontinuing a supplement? What are you doing with your supplements?
That's a good question. So I would, my supplementation has changed a little bit. So typically I will take an omega-3. I will take collagen. I take resveratrol when I eat something fatty. I take sulforaphanes. What else do I take? I cycle them just based on my menstrual cycle, but those are sort of the consistency. And magnesium glycinate. I take magnesium glycinate like all through my cycle. What's changing is I am now upping my omega-3 dosage. So now I'm having 2 grams a day, which is high. I am increasing my, vitamin D, sorry. Vitamin D is the other one I take relatively consistently through my cycle. And I'm usually at about 4,000 international units a day. So it's a liquid vitamin D, so that's 4 drops. Mm-hmm. I am now upping that. So that is between, you know, depending on, I will just sort of squeeze the dropper. So it's like somewhere between 6,000 and 8,000 I use per day. And I'm also giving that to my kids as well. So I'm giving my kids 2,000 to 3,000 international units of vitamin D per day. The other thing that I've started taking that I don't normally take is N-acetylcysteine. So this, and I take about 1 gram of that a day. So NAC is its short form. Important precursor to glutathione, which is the major antioxidant in the body. But there's also some really good research around its ability to repair scarring people with history of lung issues, pulmonary issues. Very, very good for reducing the scarring and helping to heal in there. And I can pop some of those studies in the show notes as well. So I've started to take that again, just because of my history of having severe pneumonia. It was about 10 years ago that I was dealing with this, but also just as a potential prophylactic. And again, there's no supplement on the planet at the time of this recording that has been shown to treat or prevent coronavirus, but these are just general immune boosting things. And I don't like things to be complicated with supplementation. Like, right. I just want to grab a couple of them, take them, and be on my way. There are some people that take gobs and gobs of supplements like every day. There's like 40 supplements that they take, and I don't do that. So the only ones I would add in, I would be upping your omega-3 if you already are not taking one. And we can link in the show notes the one that I'm taking, if that's if that's of interest. Vitamin D, and I like a D3 K2 blend. So I don't like D2, I like D3, and I like to pair that with a K2. And then the NAC, the N-acetylcysteine, is the only addition to my regular supplementation routine.
Perfect. Okay, good. We'll put those in the show notes. Yeah. And your mindset, what are you doing for that beautiful mindset of yours? Has it been challenging? Are you fluctuating between feelings? How are you feeling?
Yeah. I mean, for me, I love to live in my brain and I don't like to live in my body. Like it's something that I'm softening into and I'm trying to integrate the two together. So initially, and I think I mentioned this, I wasn't really paying a lot of attention to this. I thought it was just like another SARS-CoV. It wasn't going to be like that big of a deal. but the amount of information that has been coming out on it, particularly in PubMed, because I've been spending hours in the research, has been challenging for me, because I think when you have an understanding of the mechanism of action of the virus, you can have that moment where you're like, Jesus Christ, how the hell did it jump from bats to humans? And how the hell are there already 103 different strains identified? Because there are, like, it is morphing at an exponential rate. And we hope that it's going to, you know, mutate its way out of existence. I mean, that's normally the normal progression of viruses. But there's been a couple of moments where I've been really concerned and really not so much scared for myself, but just like concerned for humanity, you know, about what this really means. And I've been talking to you about this privately around what my philosophy is around all of this, because there, as I've mentioned, very distinct camps in terms of this is a big deal versus this is not a big deal. And the people who are saying this is not a big deal are the ones that are focusing on the mortality rates of influenza and so forth. But there is something to be said around the argument of making the host the most inhabitable, like if you are infected with this virus, if you can be the healthiest version of yourself that you possibly can, that's not a really, you know, friendly environment for a virus, because what they want to try and do is they want to try and overtake the, like they want to try and overtake your machinery so that they can continue to replicate. So, yeah, there's been a couple of moments that have been difficult for me, but what has really been helping is meditation. So I have been doubling down on my meditation practice, and I typically meditate after I exercise. So I will I'm getting into my body, and then I go and I sit in and breathe into my body. So that's been something that's been really helpful. And actually, I just remembered, if I can just mention one thing, about the virus. It is, when we look at some of the complications of the virus, one of the things that we're seeing is something called ARDS, or acute respiratory distress syndrome. And the protocol for this, and I've talked about this for years, and I always get blowback from physiotherapists and chiropractors who don't understand mechanics, but the standard protocol for someone with ARDS is to put them on their stomach, because it increases capillary perfusion, it helps with diaphragmatic breathing, and they will often intubate. So if someone can't get any oxygen in, they need to intubate. They need to literally force oxygen into your body via a ventilator. And sleeping on your stomach, this is another thing I wanted to bring up. This might be a good practice to start practicing sleeping on your stomach, because what we're doing is we're training the diaphragm. So the diaphragm is this muscle that kind of sits underneath your lungs. And when you breathe in, the diaphragm lowers to allow for expansion of the lungs. And then when you exhale, it will come back up. Now, when you sleep on your stomach, you are training the diaphragm to expand and move caudally against your own body weight. So you are training and strengthening your diaphragm, which is going to help with your ability to breathe deeply. And the other benefit, mechanical benefit for the body, is that you are now stretching out the neck, because in order for you to sleep on your stomach, your head has to come up and turn to the side. And for most people, those are the first two motions that we lose. Now, I'll put the link in the show notes why sleeping on your stomach is advantageous. And I wrote this article a couple years ago now, but it's still really relevant today, especially relevant today. Because if you are training your diaphragm to become stronger, and if you are increasing your oxygenation and your capillary perfusion and your alveolar perfusion by sleeping on your stomach, then that's a selective advantage, isn't it? If you become infected, worst case scenario, you become infected and you have these respiratory complications, already having the integrity in the diaphragm is really important. So, and like I said, sometimes I have people that are like, it's great, you're not supposed to sleep on your stomach, it's bad for your neck, you're supposed to sleep on your, your, you know, back with a pillow under your head. And, I don't want to sound too aggressive here, but those are people that don't understand mechanics. So sleeping on your stomach would be a great time to be practicing that now. And if it's bothering your neck, then maybe what we can do once the pandemic has lifted is to start going to body workers, chiropractors, physical therapists, osteopaths, massage therapists who can help improve the mobility and the range of motion that you have in your neck.
Personally, I am very excited for my next adjustment. we're both not getting adjusted right now. And I don't think I've spent this much time sitting in a chair or in front of a laptop. Yeah. But I love the breathing. Okay, this is a very selfish question, but I am a chronic shallow breather.
Yeah.
Is there something that I can be doing right now that's just getting like these big, beautiful breaths, because I'm terrible at this. So would that be better for me? Is that good for me right now? Should I be?
I think so. Yeah. And I think, and I'm a shallow breather by default too. If I don't think about it, I just breathe in the upper lobes of my lung. So we talked, I did a masterclass for my tribe, maybe it was last week now. And we talked about this idea of vagus nerve breathing. So you can do this on your back, hands on your belly. And then what the instruction is here is you are going to inhale for two counts. So what you want when you're inhaling is you want your belly to be lifting. So if your hands are on your belly, you want them to be lifting up. And so this is sometimes really difficult for women because we're always taught to like hold things in, but you want to just allow the belly to soften. You want to allow the belly to relax so that you can engage in that diaphragmatic breathing. So inhale for two counts. So 1,000, 2,000. Hold for just a moment on the inhale. So your belly is big. You have a little Buddha belly. And then you're going to exhale for twice as long. So you're going to exhale for 4, 3, 2, and then 1. And then on the next two reps, you'll inhale. So the next time you inhale, you're going to inhale for three counts. So 3, 1,000, 2, 1,000, 1, 1,000, hold at the top. And then you're going to exhale for double that. So now instead of exhaling for 4, you're going to exhale for 6. So 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. And then the next time you inhale for 4, exhale for 8. It's a long breath cycle. That's 12 seconds, right? In for 4, out for 8. So that is really forcing a lot of oxygen into the lower lobes of the lung. It's also, again, a way to strengthen the diaphragm. And most importantly, we are activating a nerve called the vagus nerve. So this nerve is involved in parasympathetic function. It's a really cool nerve. It starts off at the brainstem, and it's literally called the wandering nerve because it goes and it attaches to every single organ that we have in the body. And activating the vagus nerve will help us get into that calm state. It perfuses your body with oxygen, which is, you know, a good, you know, byproduct. There's no downside to that. And then it also calms you down. And this is when we are in this state of overwhelm and you're listening to the news and all they're trying to do is scare the bejesus out of you. This is a really great time for us to just sink into our bodies and get and understand, you know, even if you're scared and you're worried, like it's okay to be those things. I'm not saying that you just have to be this, you know, perennial happy person. It's okay to be scared and it's okay to be concerned. Those are normal human emotions, but get like sink into your body and actually feel what she or he or it is trying to tell you. So that would be, I'm doing that every morning and every evening, and I'm doing that with the kids as well. So we do the kids like to fall asleep with me in the bed, and they've permanently moved into my bed right now. So they are sleeping with me overnight. So we are doing that vagus, like that belly breathing together, so I can help them just kind of calm down. And we're trying to keep things as normal. I mean, next week's going to be fun because I turn into the teacher next week. So they're guaranteed to hate me all the time now, because not only do they have my totalitarian nutrition practices, but now the the Stalin style teacher. I have like workbooks I've already ordered and all this kind of stuff. But yeah, the breathing would be something that I would encourage you to do daily, twice a day. You can do it with your kids. You can do it with your partner. You can do it by yourself to some music that you find relaxing.
Right. Okay. So I want to know if you have anything else that you want to talk about that people can be doing right now? Because what I'm really excited about, and I don't know if this is just, I'm a future thinker, but how we can become, have you heard of doomsday preppers?
No. What is that?
Okay. So these are preppers who, it's fascinating. And I know they're all going like, see, I told you, but they're always planning for an apocalypse. And it's always about like food and water and, you know, stuff that they can do to their home. But what I love what you're talking about is how do we become like body doomsday preppers? Like how can we make ourselves, how can we prepare for something like this happening in the future, which the likelihood is probably good. Now that we know that something like this could travel globally, we need to be prepared. So tell me if you have anything else that we can be doing right now, but also let's dive into how do I train for the next possible time that this could happen?
Yeah. So we've talked about sleep. So doubling down on sleep, nutrition. I mean, I am a big fan of eating a carb appropriate lifestyle. So we talk about this in the Estima diet. So if that's something that you want to engage in, whether it's a ketogenic diet, which you can find lots of free resources online to engage in, or if you want to come into a community like ours, you can. Exercising and incorporating a lot of resistance training. And I like to think about resistance training as training your resistance, right? So this is, you're not training to become good at lifting weights. You're training to become good at life because you are doing hard things, right? Like when I wake up, there's not like, I don't want to work out every day. Like there's some days where I have motivation, but most days I'm like, oh God, I got to go downstairs again and do the same thing I did yesterday. But that develops grit, right? Not only the mental grit from following through on something, but it develops self-trust because you made a promise to yourself and you're following through on it. But on a cellular level, it also develops cellular grit because you are doing hard things. The fasting we've talked about, the only other thing I would actually add to this would be cold showers. Again, hard thing, something I hate. I hate to take I love my warm showers, but when you do it, it is something, again, making a promise to yourself, it creates resilience, mental toughness, and it also creates cellular grit as well. And if you want to think about how exactly it does that, you can go back to my conversation with Dr. David Sinclair on sirtuin activation. I forget what episode he is. I want to say 11 or 12.
Early on.
Yeah, pretty early on. It was around the, he has a book that I think is excellent called Lifespan, but he talks about this activation of these sirtuins. So when you are fasting, when you are cold, you are activating these defense mechanisms that are not only designed to keep you safe in that moment, but they provide longevity benefits as well. So we know that people who don't eat all day long, who engage in things like, you know, cold showers or prolonged fasting, they tend to live longer. So these are some things that I would be encouraging people when we're thinking about, you know, doomsday, like body doomsday preparation. It's about getting back to some of these foundational basics: sleep, exercise, fasting, proper nutrition. Of course, community is also a really big part of that, which we haven't talked about yet, but these are all really basics to health. And I think that that is how you make yourself an inhabitable host. That is how you make yourself not really desirable to the virus. Or if you are infected and you do have symptoms, your resilience, like the ability for you to draw on the reserves that you've already created, are going to be much greater. It's like a bank account, right? If you continue to put money into it, when you need to make a withdrawal, there's more money to take out. It's the same kind of thing. So I would say cold showers. And if you have never taken a cold shower, you don't have to do the whole thing cold. You can just, the last 30 seconds to a minute, just turn off the heat, pretend like you're jumping into a lake. Cause that's the only way that I was able to kind of get myself.
Scandinavian spa. Have you ever been to one of those where you do the circuit? So it's like the hot pool and then the steam room and then you go under. So I'm just like, I'm at a Scandinavian spa right now and blasting myself with this cold water.
Yeah. The only other thing I would add, and what I have been doing, and I'm a big essential oil fan, is I have been diffusing things that are known to shunt cortisol. So I have grapefruit diffusing in my bedroom overnight. Right now, just off to the side of this camera, I am diffusing Douglas fir, which is like a scent. It smells like a tree. And of course, we know that because we're indoors so much, we actually don't get to have that scent anymore. So it's also very, it perfumes the air. It helps me with my anxiety. And that would be the only other thing. But that's more of a secondary after you get like the sleep, the food, the exercise on point.
I love that. Are you guys doing anything creative around the house?
Well,
I think you are. I think creative. I saw on social. There's some music. There's some live music going on in your home right now.
Yeah, we, yesterday was a funny day. I had to take a break from all the data. So what I did was, I started watching, Chris Martin from Coldplay had done he just decided to do this thing called Together at Home. So he just popped on Instagram and was like, just tell me any song you want and I'll play it for you. And he was doing that. And then Giovanni was like, you know, I'm so inspired by this guy. I am going to play some piano. So I took a video of him doing it. So there was piano in the home. We always play music, and I'm trying to keep things as normal for the kids as possible. So in the morning when we wake up or at the end of my workout, I will typically play, there's a couple of songs that they really love. So I'll play those songs and then we'll dance to them. Next week is when I start homeschooling. So that is when my creative juices are really going to be tested. I have workbooks and worksheets that I have ordered in terms of like math and stuff, but I'm trying to think of ways that I can play games with them in terms of like learning French or even just math games. I don't have anything concrete yet, but like there's one thing I'm thinking of doing for French, which is have you ever played that game with your kids where you say one word and then they say one word and then you say one and you're trying to create a sentence? So I'm doing that with French. So I'm going to try and get them to create a sentence where I might say je, meaning I, and then they might say pense, you know, think, and then I might say another, and then we're just trying to create games like that. And it's going to be,
my sister taught herself German, and one of the ways that she did it was she had a label maker and she put all different words and she labeled everything in her apartment with the German word. So I could see like the kids, you can make all these little like paper, like the French words for things, and then have them place it around the space. But that's amazing that you're doing the homeschooling. It's just jumping right in. And do you know how many hours a day you're gonna do it with them?
We've come up with a schedule. So the hours, I'm not sure, because I'm not a really big fan of just like 1 hour of math and break, then 1 hour. Because what I find, especially with my older son, is once he gets into something, like he's into it. So I almost want to get him into that flow state, and then he can go as long as he needs to. And then when he needs a break, then we'll go into an activity. So then we'll get into, like, I have basketball stuff, bikes and toys and stuff that they can just run around outside with, because I'm a really big, like really big on activity and then learning, because we're waking up the frontal lobe, waking up the motor cortex. There's a really great book called Spark, around education that, around including activity that has been really foundational for me in terms of how I raise my children, but very important in terms of how I'm going to structure this homeschool. And one of my mentors, you know, Dr. Michael Hall, you know, one of his famous lines around children, especially boys, is like, with boys, you got to run them into the ground. And then when they wake up again, you know, when they get up, you run them into the ground again. So that's what we're trying to do with the kids. So maybe, I don't know if I could put a number on it, maybe 6-7 hours, something like that.
Wow. Yeah. You mentioned community, which I think is always important, but right now, and we're lucky because we get to be, you know, on a lot of Zoom calls with a lot of different people, but some people don't have that in their lives on a regular basis. So, but I've been seeing people do some pretty creative things online there. I got invited to a Friday night Zoom dance party. People are having dinner parties online. You know,
I saw that. Yeah. I saw one of my friend Emily did that. She had a dinner party, a Zoom dinner party, which I thought was really great.
How great if you've always wanted to have a dinner party and like there's zero cooking involved. you just set up a Zoom room.
Yeah, I think the social distancing is important right now, but that doesn't mean isolation. Right. So we want to be physically distant from people, but we still want to be connecting. And this is especially true for our elderly population. So we had James Mescal on the podcast who talked about the power of community. And this is a way for us to become innovative in terms of how we communicate with people. So, for example, today we are FaceTiming the kids' grandparents. Like they have an iPhone, and we're going to be FaceTiming them so they get to see their grandparents, get to talk to them. And I would encourage anybody who, you know, has to stay away from grandparents or has to, you know, who is social distancing to get on a call would be like the bare minimum, but most of us have smartphones. You can do video conferencing from your phone or from your computer. FaceTime if you have an iPhone. These things are really, really important now more than ever. And I love the creativity. Like I love the idea of a dinner party and you don't have any of the cleanup, right? You just have, you cook for yourself, then you get to see and chat to everybody, which I think is lovely.
Oh, I loved our talk today. This is amazing. Do you have anything else that you, any more, because I know you've been doing a lot of reading. Is there anything else that you want to add into this conversation?
Yeah, it's been said before, but I think it's worth mentioning again, washing your hands and being very mindful of the things that are coming into your home right now. So I asked my kids yesterday, because I'm trying to get them to wash their hands like in the morning, before and after every meal, if they've been touching their, you know, devices, because I'm letting them have a little bit more devices right now. We have to wipe down the devices and all that. So I said to my kids, like, I want you to imagine that you are putting your hands in like the grossest thing possible. Like, how well would you wash your hands? And I said to my younger son, Sebi, I said, what's like the grossest thing you can put your hands into? And he was like, diarrhea, farts, and poo. And I said, okay, so you have to imagine that you just put your hand in that. And then I said to my 9-year-old, I'm like, okay, and you, like, what's the grossest thing? And he was like, poo, boogers, and blood. So I want you, the listener, to imagine, maybe those are not the three things that are the grossest things for you, but what is the grossest thing you can imagine putting your hands into, and how would you wash your hands afterwards?
Yeah.
So like 20 to 30 seconds, getting into all those little crevices, you know, that would be my last sort of parting words, is like hand washing like a maniac and disinfecting. So we are not even right now, any Amazon packages, we are opening them outside. And then disinfecting the box, disinfecting everything before it even comes in so it can't be airborne. So that would be my last sort of parting wisdom, is hand washing.
I love that. I'll tell you the adult version. This is the adult version. If, imagine you had to chop 10 jalapenos, you know, for this fake dinner party that you're having over Zoom. Yes. And then you had to take your contact lenses out.
Ooh.
How well would you wash your hands in that?
Yeah. Perfect. All right. So I hope that this has been really useful for the listener. And I hope that I've been able to persuade some people to really not only understand the mechanism of action with the disease, but also how we can be moving forward. How can we be bigger, better, stronger? I feel like I'm saying like a Kanye West song here, but like faster, better, you know, how we can really rise from this and answer the question, how can I be the best version of myself metabolically, physiologically, psychologically, you know, from a psychological perspective as well, because these are really, this virus, at least for me, I've been questioning everything that I do, what I believe, what I don't believe. So I think that this is an opportunity for us to emerge as, you know, the biggest, baddest versions of ourselves.
Amazing. Thank you so much for taking this time with me today. Can't wait for the next one.
I can't wait to see you.
Yeah. Soon. I know. Soon. I love you. Thank you so much.
I hope you enjoyed today's episode. For those of you who want to continue on this week's Geeky Magic Carpet ride with me, visit bettershow.co/show notes. You'll find research, links, summary notes, musings that I prepared in preparation for the podcast, and I often throw in some of my best practices, bonuses, and links. All the juicy bits are in there for you. And now for the obligatory legal and medical disclaimer. This podcast is for general information only, and the advice recommendations we discuss do not replace medicine, chiropractic, or any other primary healthcare provider's advice, treatment, or care. In the consumption of this podcast, there is no doctor-patient relationship form, and the use and implementation of the information discussed are at the sole discretion of the listener. The information and opinions shared on this podcast are not intended to be a substitute for primary care, diagnosis, or treatment. This episode is brought to you by yours truly, Dr. Stephanie Estima, and Leverage. Leverage handles all production, creates the images that you see on my social media, and takes out all my awkward pauses. They are my secret magic bullet. You can visit them at getleverage.com/better.